Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to be talking about the Billy Meier case this afternoon. Probably no surprise there, but we're going to bring in a lot of current events and a lot of very important topics that relate to our daily life here on the earth. Edward Albert Meyer is a one-armed farmer from Switzerland. He's about 77 years old. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, which is about an hour outside of Zurich. His extraterrestrial contacts began back in 1945 when he was a very young boy. He would get telepathic messages and mental images to go out into the woods near his home at that time, which was in Bulach, Switzerland. And then one day while he was looking in at a stream, at some fish in a stream, out of the sky came what appeared to be a silvery pear-shaped craft, and outstepped, as this craft eventually landed, and outstepped this man of about 1,000 years old, a very elderly Plearen man, who led Billy back into the ship and then took Billy up some 70,000 meters above the earth. Whereas this young boy of 5 years old, back in 1945, got this tremendous view of the world. He could see the big picture, which is very ironic because that's what the Meyer material does. It allows you to see the big picture. And something about looking at the big picture that's very humbling. Because the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And one thing that I'm learning is the more I learn, the more I realize how correct this information is and how important it is that we pay attention to it. So young Billy was looking at these multiple screens on this ship. He originally thought were portholes, but he could see the people in them. And Svoth told him that he was on a very important mission in life, and that his role here on the earth would be to be a teacher, to be a prophet. And he would teach this ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. And primary to this teaching is something called the universal consciousness. See, here on the earth we have this kind of locked-in notion that our religions have given to us. It's a notion that there is a God up there that's more of a kind of an anthropomorphic, it's more of a human concept, where the universal consciousness is a spirit. It builds universes as a part of its own evolution. It's neither good nor evil. It is kind of neutral. It doesn't get involved directly in human affairs. It doesn't get involved in human wars. It doesn't become angry or jealous. Now, the gods of Earth were human. They came from the expanse of the universe, from strange systems and worlds. And each one of these gods set up religions, and they demanded worship, and they gave commands. And eventually, many of these gods degenerated and committed murders. So that's what's kind of happened on the earth here. We've lost the notion of an impartial universal consciousness, which creates an indissoluble web of life. And here on the earth we have an indissoluble web of life that we're destroying at an increasingly higher rate all the time, which is quite an unfortunate thing to see, because we're seeing the destruction of the natural world more and more here on the earth. And one of the things that's causing the destruction of our natural world is the rise in human population.
Next, today is World Water Day. Tonight, we look at an innovative approach to getting clean water to slum dwellers in so-called megacities. Our story is another in our occasional reports about population issues around the globe. It's part of a collaboration with National Geographic Magazine and the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting, and comes from special correspondent Steve Sapienza in Bangladesh.
Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, is one of the world's fastest-growing cities and one of the poorest. As in many other developing countries, people are leaving the countryside in search of work and a better life in the city. Dhaka's population, now estimated at 15 million, is expected to hit 20 million by 2025.
Dhaka is one of the megacities which is growing too fast.
Country director for the charity WaterAid, Dr. Khairul Islam, says the increased population density is severely taxing the city's ability to house and care for its people.
Almost 5,000 slums are in and around Dhaka city, and almost one-third of the population are living in either low-income communities and slum areas. Most of them don't have ownership over those pieces of land that they're residing. But the main challenge is provisioning essential services for this huge number of population, mainly water and sanitation.
With 2,000 newcomers daily, the struggle to find clean water in the slums often has life-threatening consequences.
Water? Yes, we have water, but the water is not always available. When water is available, it is often bad. Yesterday, a woman here thought she had cholera. She went to the hospital, but she died last night.
If you want to see the human toll exacted by unsafe water and poor sanitation in Dhaka, you come here. This is the overflow tent at the short stay unit at Dhaka's main cholera and diarrhea hospital.
This man arrived at the hospital with no vital signs. After 15 minutes of trying to revive him, his wife is given the news. The staff records cholera as the cause of death. The hospital's lead research scientist, Dr. S.K. Roy, and his colleagues work around the clock 365 days a year to save lives threatened by waterborne illness. The majority of the patients here are the urban poor, and the hospital care is free.
We are now having about 400 patients every day. But in August, September, sometime we go up to 1,200 a day. And I can tell you the average of a year is 120,000 patient average in a year. So this hospital is a quite busy one.
So overpopulation is one of the things that these extraterrestrials warn Billy the most about. And I know in the alternative community, the argument is there's just plenty of space on the earth, which there really is plenty of space on the earth. In Antarctica, there's 4.5 million square miles of living space, but it's extremely cold down there, as you well know. Not the ideal place that people want to live. So what is happening is that there are billions of people all over the world that are competing for the prime spots of living. Now, this clip I just played is about Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a small nation about the size of Idaho. It's located adjacent to India. It has a population of over 160 million people. That's more people than are in Russia. The world grows more constricted by adding 9,000 newborns per hour, net gain over death. That means here on the earth we have 9,000 new babies being born. What I'm trying to say is so if you took the number of births and subtracted the number of deaths, you'd still have 9,000 newborns per hour. That's an incredible thing that's happening. Every year, 10 million children under the age of 12 die of starvation and starvation-related diseases. And all of humankind faces this dilemma. But our world leaders continue to ignore this problem. Therefore, we have refugees all over that are trying to escape this global problem. And the immigrants come to Germany, Holland, Norway, Denmark, Spain, Australia, Sweden, England, the United States, Canada. Let me read something from Frosty Woolridge's book, America on the Brink. And this, he's quoting another book here, Frosty Woolridge's. In his prophetic book, Camp of the Saints, French author Jean Raspail featured a ragged fleet of ships sailing away from India, where the people had destroyed their civilization by their own overpopulation. However, instead of solving their own problems, they set sail towards France. You don't know my people, the squalor, the superstitions, the fatalistic sloth that they've wallowed in for generations. You don't know what you're in for if that fleet of brutes ever lands in your lap. Everything will change in this country of yours. They will swallow you up. So probably this is what we're facing here in the United States. Frosty Woolridge's book states, consequently, immigration forces the United States to the position of the third fastest growing country in the world. We expect to double our current 306 million population in 70 years. Now, this isn't because of birth rate necessarily. This is because of immigration. This will effectively double our air pollution, auto and air traffic, gridlock, the size of the cities, the carbon footprint, water usage, species extinction, sprawl, and other negative forces related to hyperpopulation growth. So this is one of the big challenges that's facing the people of the earth today, is dealing with this tremendous population growth. And if you don't want to call it population growth, we could call it overcrowding. We could call it starvation. We can call it air pollution. You can call it water pollution. But it'll be one of the biggest things that we have to deal with here on the earth. Billy's first contact, as I was talking about earlier, was with a man named Sfoth. Now, Sfoth was an extraterrestrial human, and these people allowed themselves to be called the Pleiadians, but they are not from our Pleiades. They're from a planet called Era, which exists some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. And the people on this world are in the fifth stage of human evolution. There are seven evolutionary steps to humanity. We here on the Earth are in the second stage. We're in rational life. The Pleiaren are in the fourth and fifth stages, the fourth stage is called real life. The fifth stage is life and creational wisdom. When a human civilization gets to the point of real life, they develop technologies that allow them to travel from star to star with almost no time passing. They learn a level of genetic engineering which allows them to create sentient life. So Billy's first public mission contact was with a woman named Semyase. This was his third contact. But his public mission began in 1975 when he met with this woman, Semyase, whose ship had a central intelligence. It had a organic brain. The central computer in her ship was essentially a living being. It was sentient. It was an organic intelligence. So her ship was essentially a living being with a metallic hull. So it's a little hard for us to imagine the wisdom of some of these extraterrestrial civilizations out there in the cosmos. And according to the Meyer material, there are 7.5 million extraterrestrial human civilizations in the cosmos. One of the first things that Semyase talked to Billy about was our religions. And she explained that there is a universal consciousness that doesn't correspond to our notion of an anthropomorphic God. Our scientists now are figuring this out. And I've played part of this clip before, and it's by a man named Brendan Hughes. And I'll go ahead and start this clip. It's a little quiet in the beginning, but he gives a pretty rich description of the universal consciousness. So let's listen to Brendan here for just a few minutes. Like I said, there's a little bit of quiet.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to speak on the emergence of universal consciousness. Now, admittedly, that's a controversial topic. And it's a controversial topic because so far, universal consciousness has not been scientifically proven to be true. But this conception that things need to be scientifically proven in order for them to be true is itself false. And that's neatly demonstrated each and every time scientists discover something new, something that we didn't know before. Most recently, scientists are finding evidence for the Higgs boson. But if it's true that it exists, then it means it's existed for millions and millions of years. It's always been true. So I think the way to play a game of philosophical chess is to try and start with just one sentence that we can maybe agree upon, and then see if we can take it forward one step at a time until the next sentence just seems too improbable or too outlandish, and that's really where we should stop. By the end of this talk, you might agree or disagree with everything I say, and that's fine. If you should find yourself coming to agree for the first time that some of these concepts are possibly true, then that could change the way you possibly think about many things. So I'd like to start with a simple proposition and one that is credited to Aristotle. The whole is something greater than the sum of its parts. Or put another way, everything that exists exists both as a whole unto itself as well as a component of some greater holistic system. Now, there's a lot of evidence for this proposition. For example, we know that electrons are individually charged particles, but we also know that electrons are components of atoms. Atoms are components of molecules. Molecules are components of organisms. Organisms arise within systems and ecosystems. Ecosystems are located on planets. Planets are components of solar systems. And solar systems are components of galaxies, and galaxies components of universes. So it does seem that everything that exists exists both as a whole unto itself and as a component within a greater whole. Now, if that's true, then it suggests that your true holistic identity consists of both your narrow self-identity and your component identity within a greater system. And if you can come to accept that it is your narrow self-identity that is endowed with your self-consciousness, then you can at least begin to question whether the holistic system of which you're a component has holistic consciousness. And we'll come back to that question in a minute. But we need to start by discussing what do we mean by consciousness. There's no uniform, scientifically accepted definition of the term consciousness. I think consciousness means the ability to sense or to respond to what you sense in your environment, whether it's your internal or your external environment. That's what I think consciousness is. Imagine this example. You wake up a little bit late one morning and you decide to skip breakfast. You're on your way to a meeting and you're walking down the street and you smell some freshly baked croissants coming from a nearby bakery. The smell triggers a chemical response in your brain which stimulates your appetite. You turn, you walk into the bakery, and you order a croissant. So what about plants? Well, when plants experience their environment, why don't we call it consciousness? We know that leaves will turn to face the sun to absorb its energy. We know that an entire field of sunflowers will all face east in the morning when the sun rises and they detect the sun's rays. They will then track the sun across the sky throughout the day and then all face west at sunset. We know that plants' roots will penetrate the earth and then extend in various angles as they seek out water. But we don't call this consciousness. I think consciousness is an attribute. It's not a measure of one's ability. It is something that you either have or you don't have, and you can have it in different measures. So with plants, why don't we call this consciousness? We call it things like holotropism. And we tend to say with plants it's not consciousness because it's fundamentally a chemical process. It's not consciousness. But neurobiologists are telling us that our own brains are fundamentally super chemical computers and that our own decisions, the actions we take, and indeed our entire state of consciousness at any particular time is fundamentally influenced by chemical processes in the brain and the chemical balance in our brain at any particular time. So I think not calling non-human things conscious is a weak distinction to make, and frankly, egotistical. We need to get over ourselves in that way. Surely any living thing that can experience its environment and that can respond to what it senses in its environment is conscious, but conscious in a way that makes sense to that thing, makes sense to its ability to sustain its own life. What about even really, really small things, like bacteria? Well, we know that inside your own human gastrointestinal tract, there are up to 1,000 different species of bacteria. And over the last 20 years, scientists have been discovering ways in which bacteria can signal and communicate with each other to coordinate community processes, ranging from maintenance of their population to resisting or aiding an infectious disease. But if these bacteria are signaling and communicating, then they too are conscious. And then this is where it gets really interesting. If those bacteria are living inside us and we are their environment, then we are their conscious environment too. They live inside a conscious environment, even though they could never know it. They're not aware of our higher holistic consciousness. What about things that we don't typically regard as living things? Things I've mentioned already, like electrons that orbit an atomic nucleus, or planets that orbit a sun.
I wanted to interject here a little bit. This man's name is Brendan Hughes, And he's a scientist, and you can probably look him up on YouTube if you're interested in listening to this in more depth. Now, it's just really a good explanation of something that the Meyer material has been talking about. And it's such an important concept, because once we understand that even plants are conscious, then we're going to have a higher reverence for all life. And we'll start to realize that there's a tightly woven, indissoluble web of life. There, one of Billy's most important books is called The Goblet of Truth. And it has a paragraph, which I constantly repeat, because I think it's incredibly important. It's entitled, What the Truth Knows to Say. And it goes on to explain that rivers, lakes, streams, stones, the earth, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time. And many of these creatures are connected by psychic vibrations, and they're aware of each other, and they communicate with one another. So if you go into the forest and you listen, you can hear the birds sing. You can hear the cicadas and the crickets. And you can become aware that all of these things are conscious. All of the birds, all of the little insects, all the little plants, and many of them are aware of each other. And they're connected by psychic swinging waves, called schwinging waves in the German. And this is the electromagnetic nature of life. And I'd like to say the birds sing because they sense the radiating love of creation. And this whole universal consciousness, it radiates love. And if you have the ability to objectively observe things, you will start to sense that radiating love. And in the German, that's called Empfinden, which is a spiritual process which takes place in your human spirit. You see, we all have a human spirit. It's a tiny creation of the universal consciousness. It's about the size of the head of a pin, and it exists in our midbrain. And its energy streams throughout the entire body, and it animates every cell. Let's pick back up here with Brendan as he continues to describe universal consciousness.
That form will begin to break down to its component states. Viewed this way, life and death are both processes. Life is the organization of energy into form, and death is the liberation of energy from form and the reduction of a form back to its component states. We know that to endure, any form first needs an awareness of its environment, internal and external, in order to compensate for the changes taking place. The tendency of a form to compensate for change can be observed across the vast range of natural phenomena, and it's evidenced by the interplay between the second law of thermodynamics and what we call self-organizing dissipative systems. The second law of thermodynamics holds that for every process of energy transfer in a system, there is an increase in entropy in the system. That means that for every random event that takes place, the disorder of the system will increase. In other words, systems or forms need to be able to respond to this disorder in such a way that preserves their relative stability. Spiral shapes, such as can be seen on a number of different things, from a simple hermit crab shell to the shape of the Milky Way or Andromeda galaxies, are examples of the complex patterns and structures that can emerge during a process of dissipation to retain stability over periods, in particular, of rapid expansion. Now, organisms are, by definition...
Let me pick back up where he was talking about spiral shapes. And one of the interesting things that Semyase told Billy, she said that even your ancient philosophers have stated that everything is within the human. That the human is the microcosm within the macrocosm. So what we see in nature are these repeating patterns. For example, Brendan was talking about spirals. Well, our DNA has spirals. There are spiral shapes in the galaxy. There are spiral arms in the galaxy. Whole galaxies move in a spiral rotation. There is spiral forms in the seashells. You see, all nature has these repeating patterns in it.
And to support the view that genetic mutations are environmentally responsive. For example, experiments by scientists such as Barry Hall have observed that the genetic rate of mutation in bacteria increases under environmentally stressful conditions. So, if genetic mutation is environmentally responsive, then it's not a very distinct process from what we regard as innovation. Because in both processes, it is the processing and feedback of information that results in the formation of something new. Enter social media and wearable tech, something we should expect to arise if the promotion of information networks in a system is going to enhance the ability of a system to communicate across different components of itself. Your social media stream might eventually evolve to become your externalized stream of consciousness that you choose to share with other people. This belief that we are all part of one thing is perfectly encapsulated by the Zulu word simunye, which means we are one. And this simunye hypothesis is one that is as old as philosophy. It suggests that humans should understand ourselves within this organism to be semi-autonomous, conscious measuring agents of a complex adaptive system that is constantly adjusting and responding and adapting. If the universe itself is, as science might ultimately prove, a complex dissipative system, then not only would the universe have consciousness, but that consciousness would be as old as time, and it would envelop all other forms of consciousness within it, including yours and mine. Thank you.
You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll take a short musical break and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're talking about the Billy Meyer case, of course. We're talking about the universal consciousness. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. The individual should therefore be aware that he exists only through the love of creation, and that he carries this love also within himself. All of nature, in its indescribable splendor, is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. Its laws are so wonderfully arranged that people everywhere come up against its radiating love. Love will continuously be the purpose of all existence, and all timely in its given logic. And love is the highest principle in creation. You should be able to look at a tree and recognize that everything follows that principle of love in its absolute logic. And every tiny plant and every tiny animal in creation fulfills its purpose. Each creation existing according to the same law of love, all life is in the absolute perfection, which it should be through the love of creation. And every tiny plant, every tiny animal in creation fulfills its purpose in creation, except for the human, who has a consciousness, who can turn himself away from the radiating love of creation. You know, Elizabeth Moosbrugger wrote the foreword to Billy's book, The Might of Thoughts. And she said, "So this book lies before you and is dedicated to a humankind that is ill in its consciousness. Unfortunately, we here in humanity, we are ill in our consciousness." Now, the German term that relates to that is Sartung, which means to be out of control of the good nature. And we need to take the time to examine our thoughts. We need to clarify our thoughts. And how we do that is we need to look at our own thoughts. And in on page 20 of The Might of Thoughts, it has the garden analogy. We should be able to look into our garden and recognize those plants / thoughts which are weeds, which are out of control. Thoughts which are very negative, or purely positive, are much like weeds in our garden which grow out of control. And we need to reach in there and pull those unhealthy thoughts out by the roots. When a garden is started, it is certain that some form of plant life will start in that garden. And the consciousness is like a garden. If it is not correctly maintained, there will be wildly growing negative thoughts which have a confusing and destructive effort. These wildly growing thoughts are much like the destructive weeds that appear in gardens. Once animated and created, they develop their own life. Did you know your thoughts develop their own life? The thoughts of our great scientists, our great musicians, our great teachers live beyond the life of those individuals. We're still affected by the thoughts of those great teachers and great scientists that have come in the past. Never underestimate the might of your thoughts. Now, Billy states that every human being must make the effort to clarify his or her thoughts so that those thoughts can become more valuable, more purposive, and more productive. Now, for me, the clarification of my thoughts occurs When I go back over things again and again, and clarification means the action of making a statement or a situation less confused and more comprehensible, we should practice clarifying our thoughts. And that way we can get back into a neutral balance. All of nature is neutrally balanced. And you can learn to rid yourself of negative energy simply by breathing deeply. Breathing, taking in air, and exhaling. Doing that two or three times in a row will help you relieve the negative energy. The human being gathers the sweet as well as the bitter fruits of his or her own thoughts. When a human being starts a garden, then it is certain that some form of plant life will grow in it. What's the same way with your thoughts? Guaranteed, the thoughts that come into your consciousness will grow one way or another. Negative thoughts can proliferate like wildly growing weeds, and they will displace everything. And that's when mental illness comes. When you have wild and uncontrolled thoughts that you can't stop, you need to reach in and pull those out by the roots. We need to clarify our thoughts. We need to focus on healthy thoughts. There are certain things that you can do to promote healthy thoughts. Take the time to go out into nature. Take the time to sit and relax and listen to the sounds of nature. Listen to the cicadas, the crickets. Listen to the birds sing. Realize that you're a part of all things. That's what love really is. When you start to realize that you're a part of all things. And that spiritual process is called Empfinden in the German. It's a fine spiritual perception. See, we here on the earth, higher creatures like human beings and your dog, your cat, whales, dolphins, elephants, we are wisen. We are independently existing life forms with our own individuality and our own personality. Now, human beings, the evolution of the human is consciousness-based. The purpose of your life is evolution. And you live through many, many, many lifetimes to evolve. Your human spirit comes out of your body when you die, and it goes into the band of energy. It goes into the spiritual realm where the universal consciousness takes your past life experience and places them in the storage banks. And then you kind of go into a rest state. Now, about typically 152 years, a lifetime and a half, the universal consciousness will take your human spirit, place it back into the body of a child on the 21st day after the sperm fertilizes the egg, and that embryo is spiritually animated with the spirit form. The spirit form reincarnates into the embryo along with the consciousness and personality, which reincarnate through what's called the comprehensive consciousness block. Each time we reincarnate, we get a new personality. But your past life experiences are not only stored in the storage banks, but they're stored deep within your subconscious. Now, as you grow up as a child again, you will receive inspiration from your subconscious. And that inspiration will guide you through your life. And You will also receive impulses from the storage banks, and that will also help you with your spiritual growth. Because in each lifetime, wisdom builds on top of wisdom. And that's the purpose of our life. You see, wisdom is a kind of knowledge that produces energy. And when we evolve, we also help the whole universe in its evolution process. See, the universe that we live in is conscious. It is evolving. And we were created to help the universal consciousness in its own process of evolution. That's the purpose of our life. And the human spirit, again, is a tiny little electrical spiritual life form that exists in the center of your midbrain, in the area that's devoted to your eye movement and to your thoughts. So this is the whole purpose of our life, is spiritual evolution. And that's why we reincarnate many, many, many times. I'd like to get back also to the importance of our thoughts and the tremendous might of our thoughts, and the fact that this is a hidden secret. And Billy describes it as it's been hidden under the punishment of death. And the people that knew about the tremendous might of our thoughts were often forbidden to reveal their knowledge, their cognitions, and ability. As strictly forbidden knowledge, an enormous amount of nonsense, as well as everything real, actual, truth-based, in accordance with the laws and recommendations, was assimilated into the secret sciences, to which no normal outsider ever had access. A fact that still today in the 20th century is a realness that cannot be denied. Even today, much of the unmeasurable knowledge of humankind, which has been collected over tremendous periods of time, is hidden in the inaccessible secret sciences and will be defended until the death of the Pope, the bigwigs, and those of the secret sciences, which bring them tremendous life-affirming benefit, progress, and success. And then religions and politics will be eradicated. The financial industry will disappear. War, unpeace, hunger, and the terrible things of the world will suddenly come to an end. So when we start to understand the real power of our thoughts, then many of the negative things that exist today in our world will start to go away. Many of the negative things, like assassinations. And I want to, gosh, I don't know how, where the time has gone. I want to get also back to Contact 136 and one of the negative things that is happening and has happened and was prophesied in Contact 136 was the assassination of John Lennon. So let's look back and see this assassination of John Lennon as it was predicted by the Meyer material.
Close your eyes. Imagine no cell phones, no Twitter, no 24-hour sports and news cycles. Communication outside the home was the nearest payphone on a street corner. Hard to imagine today unless you lived it. That was the case 30 years ago to date, December 8, 1980, the day John Lennon was shot and killed. But for millions of people, the news didn't come across from their local news anchor or Walter Cronkite. It came from the most familiar voice in all of sports to this day, Howard Cosell on Monday Night Football. Tom Rinaldi shares the backstory of that historically tragic night.
The death of a man who sang and played the guitar overshadows the news.
By the time Walter Cronkite began the nightly news on December 9th, 1980, The biggest single news story in the world was more than 18 hours old. In America, millions of people didn't find out what happened from a newscast or a special report. They learned John Lennon was dead by watching a football game.
Hello again, everyone, and we're excited about tonight because the Patriots have not been able to beat Shula and Miami here at the Orange Bowl since 1966.
That night in New York City, a local TV news producer for WABC, Alan Weiss, was in a motorcycle accident in Central Park and taken to nearby Roosevelt Hospital.
One of the EMTs said to me, "You're really lucky. If it was the weekend with all the shootings and stuff that go on, you could be in the ER for hours before anybody sees you, but it's a quiet night tonight."
A 24-yard attempt.
The Dolphins tied the game at the end of the third quarter. Cosell, Gifford, and Fran Tarkenton called the action.
Frank, you just can't come into a game the way New England has come into this. Fighting for a playoff berth, you've got to go all out and be aggressive.
In New York, Weiss noticed another patient being wheeled past him.
Two of the police officers come out, and I hear one officer say to the other one, "Can you believe it? John Lennon." I opened up my eyes and I looked up and I said, "Excuse me, officer, what did you say?"
Just before 11 that night outside the Dakota, his apartment building in New York, Lennon was shot four times by an obsessed fan named Mark David Chapman. Dr. Stephen Lim was working in the emergency room at Roosevelt Hospital.
We were told that he had no vital signs, and the nurses, in fact, confirmed no blood pressure, no pulse, no breathing, no response.
I knew that there was a payphone in the waiting room. So I called the assignment desk, spoke to Neil Goldstein, the assignment editor. "Neil, I'm at Roosevelt. I think John Lennon's been shot."
At the time of the call, Lennon was still in surgery.
I literally took his heart in my right hand and massaged his heart, hoping that perhaps when we restored some blood volume, we could restore some cardiac function. But that was not to be the case. And at about 11:15 that evening, John Lennon was pronounced dead.
Outside the hospital that night, Alan Weiss described what happened next.
There was a scream, a woman's voice. I was told, I did not see who was screaming, I was told it was Yoko Ono. "Oh no, no, oh no, oh no."
She said, "No, it's not possible. You're lying. He can't be dead. He was just alive. I saw him."
Before anyone outside Roosevelt Hospital knew of Lennon's fate, Weiss confirmed with his own doctor what happened, and then reported it. In Miami, the Patriots and Dolphins were tied in the closing minutes of the fourth quarter.
Beautiful shot by Kavanaugh.
When the phone rang in the production truck.
ABC News called the truck and said John Lennon has been shot in front of his apartment building and died on the way to the hospital. I immediately called ABC News back. They confirmed it to me. I then knew what the next step should be, and that was to call my boss, Rune Arledge.
Through the IFD, I was listening to the phone calls. We're trying to reach Rune Arledge. Howard Cosell, who said, "What's going on? What's going on?" And, of course, Fran and I looking at each other and trying to keep track of a very important football game.
Butterflies must be churning in the stomach of John Smith, the field goal kicker for New England.
Rune told me what I should do and how I should do it, being very careful about me giving Howard the news because Howard was friends with John Lennon, and Rune knew that he would be upset.
There he is, John Smith, and he could be on the spot in just a moment.
As the game went to commercial break with 40 seconds left, Cosell was uncertain what to do. He told Gifford off the air what he knew, that John Lennon was dead. In the booth, before coming back live, they had less than a minute to decide what to do.
He was shot outside his apartment, the Dakota apartment. Fellas, I just don't know. I'd like your opinion. I can't see this game situation allowing for that news flash. Can you?
Absolutely, I can see it.
You can?
You betcha.
It was just a situation where you didn't quite know what to do with it. And meanwhile, we decided we would go ahead and go with it.
John Smith is on the line, and I don't care what's on the line, Howard. You have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
Honestly, I was still concerned that maybe we had done the wrong thing. As it turns out, we didn't. We informed millions and millions of people that one of the great people of show business had been assassinated.
John Lennon would have been 70 years old this past October.
Give peace a chance. John Lennon is certainly one of those people that was focused on peace. And one of the prophecies in Contact 136, in the Billy Meyer context, it was the assassination of John Lennon. I'm going to take about a minute and a half break, play a little relaxing music, and we'll be back. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Just before the show, I was meditating, and I must admit, I got a little bit too deep into meditation and snapped out of it just minutes before the show was going to go live. So I think I've been the first hour in a daze, and if you noticed, I apologize. Just one of the strange things that happens in life. I want to share some very important ideas regarding meditation in Billy Meyer's book called Meditation from Clear Visibility. He states that belief is a path to destruction and devolution and leads to insanity and confusion as well as a perturbed consciousness. Meditative thoughts and feelings are cultivated again and again by thinking or muttering certain phrases several times a day. Now, I must admit, I haven't been doing this kind of meditation. Meditation I do is to clear my mind and get into a deep state of relaxation. It's almost like a meditation sleep. But there are some 77 sentences that the Meyer material says can be repeated And here are a couple of these, which I'd like to start repeating more myself. These are a couple that jumped out at me. Everything is achievable for me, and I master whatever I wish to accomplish. Everything is achievable for me, and I master whatever I wish to accomplish. Second sentence, I always remained relaxed and thereby gain control over myself. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. Meditation is a form of concentration that leads to the control of the mind. Most of the worries of the world are created by illogical thinking. By controlling our thinking, we control our physical and mental health. By learning meditation, we develop the meditation concentration. Meditation can be a method of creating a balance between negative and positive thinking. This state of balance is called neutral thinking. I have a clip here which describes meditation. And this is a man named Dan Harris, and he's going to give his thoughts on meditation.
There's no way a fidgety and skeptical news anchor would ever have started meditating were it not for the science. The science is really compelling. It shows that meditation can boost your immune system, lower your blood pressure, help you deal with problems ranging from irritable bowel syndrome to psoriasis. And the neuroscience is where it really gets sci-fi. There was a study out of Harvard that shows that short daily doses of meditation can literally grow the gray matter in key areas of your brain having to do with self-awareness and compassion, and shrink the gray matter in the area associated with stress. There was also a study out of Yale that looked at what's called the default mode network of the brain. It's a connected series of brain regions that are active during most of our waking hours when we're doing that thing that human beings do all the time, which is obsessing about ourselves, thinking about the past, thinking about the future, doing anything but being focused on what's happening right now. Meditators not only turn off the default mode network of their brain while they're meditating, but even when they're not meditating. In other words, meditators are setting a new default mode. And what's that default mode? They're focused on what's happening right now. In sports, this is called being in the zone. It's nothing mystical. It's not magical. You're not floating off into cosmic ooze. You are just being where you are. The cliche in self-help circles is being in the now. You can use that term if you want, but because it's accurate. It's slightly annoying, but it's accurate. It's more just being focused on what you're doing. And the benefits of that are enormous. And this is why you're seeing these unlikely meditators now, why you're seeing the U.S. Marines adopting it, the U.S. Army, corporate executives from the head of Ford to the founders of Twitter, athletes from Phil Jackson to many, many Olympians, scientists, doctors, lawyers, school children. There's this sort of elite subculture of high achievers who are adopting this because they know it can help you be more focused on what you're doing and it can stop you from being yanked around by the voice in your head. My powers of prognostication are not great. I bought a lot of stock in the company that made Palm Pilot back in 2000, and that didn't go so well for me. But having said that, I'm going to make a prediction. I think we're looking at meditation as the next big public health revolution. In the 1940s, if you told people that you went running, they would say, who's chasing you? Right now, if you tell people you meditate, and I have a lot of experience with telling people this, they're going to look at you like you're a little weird most of the time. That's going to change. Meditation is going to join the pantheon of no-brainers like exercise, brushing your teeth, and taking the meds that your doctor prescribes to you. These are all things that if you don't do, you feel guilty about. And that is where I think we're heading with meditation, because the science is so strongly suggestive that meditation can do really, really great things for your brain and for your body. The common assumption that we have, and it may be subconscious, is that our happiness really depends on external factors. How was our childhood? Have we won the lottery recently? Did we marry well? Did we marry at all? But in fact, meditation suggests that happiness is actually a skill, something you can train just the way you can train your body in the gym. It's a self-generated thing. And that's a really radical notion. It doesn't mean that external circumstances aren't going to impact your happiness. it doesn't mean you're not going to be subject to the vagaries of an impermanent, entropic universe. It just means you were going to be able to navigate this with a little bit more ease.
Well, that's meditation. I'm going to bring on Solaris this afternoon. Solaris, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Mark. How are you doing today?
I went into a meditation daze about an hour ago. I don't know that I've snapped out of it yet. When I go into these real deep states of meditation, I lose all track of time. And this has been very, very unusual today. I'll have to go back and listen to this episode and see how it all came together. Sometimes life works in mysterious ways. It's really hard to understand sometimes. You know, I have so many different lines of thought that seem to be coming together. And we've been talking about these historical trends which the Meyer material has been prophetically discussing. And just to briefly go over them, some of these we've talked about are the rise of Zionism in Israeli and the U.S., committing these crimes with their military and secret services. We've talked about Reagan unknowingly creating setting the stage for actions that could result in a third world war. We've talked a little bit about the volcano that could occur in Vesuvius in Italy. We've talked about the Vatican committing great crimes called the Holy See. We've all of this is talked about in Contact Report 136. We've talked also about the prophecy about this new cooling time that will come over the earth, where we have this icy cold weather. Also, this contact prophesied about Lady Diana being killed. It talked about the attempted assassination of Reagan, the assassination of John Lennon. And then we've also discussed the past few days population control and how population may be one of the biggest issues that we have to face here coming up very shortly, and it's so many different areas of information. It seems almost a little overwhelming at times. What are your thoughts, Solaris?
Yeah, it seems like it's very, very busy, and it's almost unfortunate that it's not going in a better direction. You know, it'd be nice if everything was just going in a more positive spiral instead of this whole chaotic kind of mode we're in right now as a civilization. So, yeah, it's very, very interesting what we're witnessing.
I have the impression, though, that at least a certain part of our society and community seems to be learning and waking up a little. I think it's a small part, unfortunately, but I think it is. It is happening. There are certain people that are waking up and becoming much more aware. I feel like I am anyway. I feel like I'm learning a whole lot of things.
You're on the fast track without a doubt. But I think you've always been expanded in consciousness anyway, so it's easier for you to adapt to new information. Yeah.
Well, thanks. It's a weird world that we're living in, isn't it?
It's bizarro, Mark. It's very, very strange. And you know, it's hard to stay positive. I mean, I do think that meditation is a good thing, or any kind of training, actually, to move your energy and start, you know, going to a higher overtone of life itself. But, yeah, you know, for myself, I think you're familiar with, I've had some issues in the past with induction that took away that aspect of meditation to a point where I've interfaced with a lot of other things. So I don't meditate much anymore, but I still like to train.
Is it hard? So I mean, it's almost like you can't meditate. Is that what you're saying?
You know, after I was disrupted with the artificial intelligence and the interface that I had for all those years, it just completely put me in a space of not doing meditation anymore, because they disrupted that flow so severely. And going back to that is just like almost impossible now. But it's a different thing. I have consciousness in motion now in my life, where I'm just focused every day. But I don't do the deep meditations like I used to do. Not at all. But I think people should. I mean, I think it's good for most people to do those.
Do you think part of what you were dealing with was transhumanist in general? I mean, were you kind of assaulted by these transhumanist elite?
Well, I think if people look at my my benchmark of information, obviously it was related to a band from Canada. Those were the people that inducted me into the program and actually pulled me into the artificial intelligence design program. So it wasn't an elite group of people. It was just a lot of people with a lot of money who were high profile, who had access to the technology and were using it. And that's pretty much what happened. So, but they do.
The,
I mean, they have it everywhere.
Do you think the global elite, though, who are really transhumanists, do you think they use certain, you know, rock bands and people like that to kind of mold society and to, you know, for who, for what, you know, what purpose they do these things is so bizarre. I can't understand
mass
why
control.
They...
Mass control. Yeah, Mark, it's all about mass control. It's all about pulling the masses in into a false reality and matrix, brainwashing them. And they have these role models out there, whether they're in the industry of music or they're in the entertainment industry. Even John Lennon was a, you know, that was mass mind control too, even though it was a positive thing for the most part. I mean, he was teaching and preaching the language of love and light, but the bottom line is it's still mass mind control any way you look at it. And I'll tell you, the masses are pretty scary when they're swayed by their idols. There's no doubt about that.
That's interesting.
And I think that's a threat, yeah.
That's interesting. I just want to also say 469, if you want to speak to the host, just we'll bring you on the air. I want to play a clip here by a physicist named Richard Seed. He's one of these transhumanists who is talking about becoming God.
And by the way, it's not nice people that run it. It's an artificial system like fractional reserve banking and derivatives and high-frequency trading meant to scam you and end the free market as we know it and create a monopoly. One system, one unified, hellish collective with engineered food, water, everything. I mean, it's just a whole new world. The globalists want to be God. They want to control the universe. Human cloning researcher Richard Seed, he says, when the shift hits the fan, I will be God. And that's what Ray Kurzweil, all of them say. We're doing this, you're not going to stop us, and we're basically, you're going to become one of us if we even let you, or we'll sit on you like a bug. Here he is saying, I will be God. I will be God.
We're going to become gods. Period. If you don't like it, get off. You don't have to contribute. You don't have to participate. But if you're going to interfere with me becoming God, we'll have big trouble. Then we'll have warfare.
I mean, this is who these people are.
Solaris, don't you think the people, the sane, rational, normal people, need to really step up and take control back in our society? Because we're on the path to total destruction. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree, and it's almost laughable listening to that guy. I mean, he's trying to sound so powerful and so infinite, and he just sounds like an imbecile, insane jack, you know what. So it's so weird listening to him. I'm like, is that supposed to be threatening? And I've been interfaced with the artificial intelligence, Mark. I understand how the technology works, okay? And the bottom line is those things can melt and short-circuit. They can easily be disrupted. And even though they're encrypted, a lot of the signals with the artificial intelligence design, it can be taken down. There's no doubt about it. There's a switch you can flip on and off, just like implants. So they're not infinite and they're not immortal. And if they think they can get immortality by interfacing with the artificial intelligence, they're really being misled into the false matrix.
You know, Ray Kurzweil, I saw him recently, and people don't know who Ray Kurzweil is. He's the guy in charge of what they call the Singularity Institute. He really is in charge of this whole transhumanist movement. And I tell you, I didn't get the impression that he was doing real well. He didn't look real healthy to me. I think that there's... these people, I think, are on the wrong path. And they're trying
absolutely.
And they're trying to lead the rest of society down that path.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, you're right, Mark. You are. Well, the artificial intelligence isn't a bad thing. I mean, it can be used for positive things, but they're not using it for that, and I don't think they ever will. That's the problem. It's always going to be used for extreme, either for weaponization of something or maybe to enhance their own mental, emotional states or psychic energies or, you know, whatever they want to enhance. But the bottom line is it's still technology, and we already have all those components within us. We don't need a machine to show us ascension. We already are ascended beings in consciousness, and the DNA knows how to activate through frequency. So really, it's kind of a diversion. It's a diversion of full light ascension to their version of ascension, and a lot of people get misled, if you ask me. I think it is a downward spiral to nowhere, just after where I've been with the technology. They could have used it for good, but they just put me through hell and back with it. So
it's very interesting. Why do you think you were singled out?
I think it was my psychic ability and the path that I was on when I was inducted. I mean, I was doing a lot of powerful work. I'm a second-degree black belt in Taekwondo. I was teaching martial arts, writing books, doing DNA activation and healing. Plus, I was a land surveyor, and I was doing topographic maps. I mean, I had a lot of abilities that I think they were wanting to implement into their artificial intelligence design and also create a brain template. So I think I was a good candidate for the technology itself. But the bottom line is they weren't very nice with me at all. As a matter of fact, it was extremely traumatic and abusive. So when I go through those cycles and I understand the technology, I understand mind control, I understand psychotronic warfare, and it's just you know, what they're doing with it is so wrong. So that's one of the reasons I stood up and talked about it, because it was just not appropriate.
Do you think the elite kill off people like Bob Marley and John Lennon and people like that who talk about peace and unity?
Seems that way, doesn't it, Mark? It seems like anybody who's talking about love and raising the vibratory rate of the planet is automatically targeted, I would say. Wouldn't you?
I would agree. I have a clip here I want to play where John Lennon talks about the Illuminati. Let me play this.
Genitals and naked and long hair, that they concentrate their ammunition there. We know where it comes from, and we get on with the job of selling and or doing whatever we're doing.
Yes, yes.
And I believe that. You leave the door open, man, and that's where the door they'll come in, you know.
As a Beatle, we made it. And there was nothing to do. We had money, we had fame, and there was no joy. And then I met Yoko, and she was making it as an avant-garde artist, and we both tried to find something we had in common, a common goal in life, because she couldn't rock and roll with me, and I couldn't avant-garde with her. I mean, we can, but that's what we thought at the time. So we decided the thing we had in common was love, and from love came peace. So we decided to work for world peace.
And how do you do that?
We do it by the advertising method. We believe that today's society, advertising is the thing politicians use and commercial companies use, the Beatles use it, John and Yoko should use it. Our product is peace.
Of less words and more peace. I think the only way to do it is Gandhi's way. And that's non-violent, passive, positive, or whatever they called it those days. You know? We're selling it like soap, you know. And you've got to sell and sell until the housewife thinks, oh, well, there's peace or war. That's the two products. Peace.
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 Peace in your mind, peace on earth, peace at work, peace at home, peace in the world.
It's to try and get people orientated to think peace, like eat for peace, breathe for peace, and dance for peace, and make love for peace, you know, to just have the peace like a mantra going round and round in your head.
War is a game that's gone too far, you know. It's just like we've all just woken up one morning and thought, is it a dream, is it a nightmare, what's been going on? And we're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think war is a game and it's gone too far, as John Lennon says? Solaris.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it's just a matrix. It's another false matrix and a game board. But, you know, even they were starting to awaken to the illusion of where they were trapped, you know, as a band. I mean, you look at that and you see all their success and all their money, and they still realize that it wasn't right. And I at least applaud them for trying to come forward and expressing themselves on a higher level to awaken people to that.
Well, it seems like the elite is trying to navigate society back into the war with the whole thing with ISIS or ISIL or whatever we want to call them now. You know, we have we have another reason to go in and bomb people. What are your thoughts on all this? I'm not saying that there aren't crazy people in ISIS that would do bad things, but I think that the elite stir these groups up and they give them money and they arm them. And I think that war is just a big business where people gain either power and or money.
Yeah, and it is a business without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. It's a big manipulation, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one. But at the same time, I mean, it's as a martial artist, I can tell you, you know, I don't counterattack unless it's a life-threatening situation. Now, when you're dealing with psychotic groups like them, it doesn't matter who trained them. Bottom line is they're destructive and they're aggressive and they're insane and they're brutal and they're just out of control. So somebody has to put them back in line and get rid of them, bottom line. So if it takes something like that, you know, to go over there and take out a few of their areas and targets, then I guess that's going to have to happen. Unfortunately, I mean, this is what we're living in the world today. I mean, do you want to just have evil rampant across the globe? I certainly don't. And I'll tell you what, I'm very peaceful, but I'll tell you what, I have a very strong warrior in me that will not tolerate that kind of behavior and abusive people. So there is always a point where we counterattack, and sometimes we're just forced to do that.
Let me play a clip that talks about ISIS and this Iraqi caliphate that's forming.
In the name of Allah, and supported by the Quran, chant the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. In a one-hour documentary, ISIS explained their world. It is a world of horror, and one that they display brazenly. The professional video starts in Fallujah, only 50 kilometers away from the gates of Baghdad. Here, where 10 years ago America fought a bloody battle, masked men with black flags now dominate the streets. When these fighters attack, they don't take prisoners. This assault on an Iraqi military base is documented by their cameras, showing their atrocities in detail. The ISIS video grants anonymity to the offenders, but exhibits victims without mercy. The ISIS offensive troubles this Iraqi family. They have lived in quiet Switzerland since 1996. Today, close relatives back in Iraq are in great danger.
Eine Verwandte von mir hat mir gesagt, also ich habe ihn gefragt, ob er immer noch lebt. Er hat gesagt, warten auf den Tod ist schlimmer als Tod selber. Das machen sie jetzt.
In a town of the Anbar province, ISIS call former soldiers of the Iraqi army to a mosque. Non-Sunni men are barred. The common enemy is now the mainly Shia government in Baghdad. The men deliver confessions. They repeat what they are told to declare, while the camera is rolling.
You know, I think what happens with these terrorist groups, I do think that the elite in the West are trying to use them, and they try to stir them up, and they give them weapons, and they try to stir them up and rekindle the whole war on terror, because I think that's how they're trying to bring in this police state, this new world order. But I don't really think they know what they're doing, because I think they're stirring up a nest of rattlesnakes that they can't control. You know,
I think these
people are dangerous, and the elite think they can control them. But I don't really think they can. I think, like I said, they're dealing with a group of rattlesnakes. Here's the only way I can really, you know, identify that. What are your thoughts, Solaris?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're psychotic as all hell, and the bottom line is you can't rationalize with insane people. So, you know, shame on people who support these groups and actually fund these groups. But it is a moneymaker. I mean, you're talking about war in general, and that is a moneymaker. But there's so much corruption, and what I've seen is that there's just so much negativity, and there's so much coarse energy saturating across the planet that it's just opening up and oozing all this debris out, which is like almost like a disease and a cancer with an open wound, you know, that's just festering. So we're dealing with a real, real interesting timeline right now.
It's interesting because I like your analogy of an open wound that's festering, because, you know, we see the Middle East and we see this chaos, but also in these third world nations like Bangladesh, which I've been talking about, with a population of 165 million, where the people, they're living in squalor. And they just want to escape the horrible conditions that are in their own countries. So, and it's somehow in the West, we've been sheltered from all this, and we've been uneducated, and now it's like suddenly, oh, we're waking up to all of these things happening at once. I have a clip here. It talks about fighting back against ISIS. Let's listen.
So Peshmerga, it means those who chase towards death, those who run towards death. What nickname would you give the Iraqi army right now?
Well, I'm not a name Jaban to snog his intimation that way. Yeah, near Yamoku Hijibir Magic Kurduzani, Sally Rai, Morocco, Campus Margaman. I laid Manaatini, I said, Gianni, who bought the Galapina Kurduzana.
Last week, the extremist militant Sunni group, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, along with other Sunni militia and former Saddam loyalists, violently took over large areas of territory in Iraq, including Mosul, the second largest city. Many have blamed the escalating conflict partially on the increasingly sectarian policies of Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, and fear this could be the start of a devastatingly brutal civil war.
So Iraq has fallen into utter chaos now. And so all that time and effort and people that were over there, we didn't make anything better at all, did we?
No. You know what it is? It's just you have to deal with the culture of each area. And the bottom line is those guys have been at war with each other for a very long time. They've been hostile and brutal to each other for a long time. And for us to go in there and think we could fix it up or you know, put a Band-Aid on it is just really foolish, in my opinion, because consciousness, once again, needs to change over there. And it's not changing over there. They're going to have their false belief systems and their false deities and whatever else that they worship that really reflects their behavioral patterns. And obviously, it's not working for them. You know, whatever, I don't care how many prayers they do. It's not happening. It's not working. You know what I mean? They're not in a state of grace because of their activities towards each other, the disrespect they show to women. I can go on and on about what's happening over there. It's insane. And it's just never going to get better. I mean, once again, that's the cancer that just is literally a disease. And it's not improving, and it won't improve. And you know what, Mark? So many centuries could go by, and if they were still here, it would be the same old crap. I guarantee you they will never, ever evolve.
That's interesting. Now, what they're trying to do now is set up something they call a caliphate, which is an Islamic state led by a supreme religious and political leader that they call a caliph. And supposedly these caliphs are directly descended from Muhammad, and they're supposed to be, you know, God's messenger, so to speak. So, yeah, you're right. I think these extreme religions create a kind of dullness in consciousness. And I think in some ways they act like people that have schizophrenia or epilepsy, where they'll be fine for a week or so, and then they get into this state of delusion where they can just kill people and not have any compassion, not have any empathy, and not have any moral reasoning. And I think you're right. It's going to take a change of consciousness over there. I don't know. Right. I mean, other than completely killing them all, which I just don't think that's a good thing either.
Well, you know what? It's interesting because what you just described to me is a perfect example of psychotronic warfare remotely. That's how people function when they're under psychotronic programming or mind control. So you can take that to that level. Yeah. So literally, I'm not saying that they're subjected to that. It's possible because it sounds like it. You know, whenever people pray or meditate, they're going into an altered space of consciousness, period. That's just the way it works. So when you pray, you're shifting an energy in your dynamic to another focus. And with that focus comes electromagnetic field mapping. You can tag the target. You can run a psychotronic program on the target that could be subliminal and trigger them with programs. I mean, so a lot can be going on behind the scenes that people may not even be aware of. I'm not saying it's happening over there to them, but it's highly possible. I know we have the technology to do it. I know it's global, and they certainly could be targeted to behave that way. But you know what? I think when push comes to shove, it's really about, like I said before, stepping up and taking responsibility for being the person you are and wiping out, in a sense, taking away these what I call false religions and just stepping it up to spirituality. But, you know, if it were me, I don't have the patience that everybody has here on this world, and I'll be frank with you. And to me, it's like if they keep this up, I would literally turn that area to glass. I mean, that's how I feel about it. And, you know, I try not to be harsh about it, but I'll tell you, it's never getting better over there. It's never getting better. Every time I look into that window of that world, it's always noxious. And it's very concerning because, once again, they're spreading that over around the world, and they have this global wannabe domination thing, which I don't think is ever going to ever play out the way they want it to, because a lot of people, you know, when you play in your own sandbox, that's one thing. You get out of your little sandbox and you run over to somebody else's country and start pulling that, you're going to have problems, you know?
No doubt, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty intense there, you know?
Well, it is, but, you know... I know. But, you know, sometimes, well, look what happened. I mean, you know, we've done it before, and, you know, it's not pretty. Nothing's pretty. But is it pretty what's happening over there right now? Absolutely not.
Well, it seems that education and rising, getting a better understanding, for example, that's why I was talking about the universal consciousness earlier and the indissoluble web of life and realizing that we're all linked. And we're all really one.
Well, I could dispute you on that, Mark.
Well, go ahead, dispute me.
Well, let's put it this way: your state of consciousness defines where you're at. Okay, it's like a dimensional space, and it's a frequency. So we're not all one. If we were all one, we would have peace on Earth. Okay, I'll guarantee you that right now. There's different rifts and fabrics in each dimensional shift of energy of each individual. We're supposed to be multidimensional, and a lot of us are. But then there are many that are just plain linear, and I would suspect maybe even entity-controlled. So you've got different frequencies there, and honestly, they don't serve a purpose. Evil does not serve a purpose. I know people might argue that, but it really doesn't serve a purpose in any form or design. And the reason there's evil on the world is because people are disconnected from source, period. So, no, we are not all connected, and I don't believe we are. I believe that star people are connected and psychically connected to the higher consciousness and to their celestial heritage and each other remotely if they want to be, but not, you know, I don't believe everybody's connected at all. If they were, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing on this world. Look at the animal kingdom. Look at the plant kingdom, you know, and the mineral kingdom. Everything's getting completely butchered.
Well, I do think people can shut down that connection because they in a sense you're right. I mean, you can turn off the connection and close yourself off from mm-hmm. from that love of creation, and I think that's why we can just bulldoze an entire forest and not have any concept that we've destroyed something very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
we need to understand that we reside on a planet where things are supposed to be in balance, where things are supposed
right.
to be interconnected. And you're right, there are people that have willfully disconnected themselves from the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why
yeah.
we have the state we have now.
Mm-hmm. There's many species here. In a suit, you know, we're different species here from different star systems and universes. You know, that's really the truth of it when you look at the complexity of who we and what we are. And different races associated with that. So different states of consciousness associated with that. It's a real mix down here. So I would like to see it go to a more positive direction. But, you know, if people are constantly attacking each other, I mean, if they're constantly attacking a star person or a star being because of their beliefs or their vibrational speed, then there's something wrong with that. You know, we've got to take a good look at why people are being persecuted like they are. And is it out of jealousy? Is it out of psychosis? Is it out of being so programmed by their false gods that they can't see straight or clear?
Flores, I want you to get the opportunity to tell people about your website, your radio shows, and your books, which I think your books are very, very good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Mark. My website's Night Shadow Anomaly Detectives, and my books are on Amazon.com, and I have a documentary on Amazon as well. And that's pretty much it.
And well, tell them a little more about your books. You've got several books out, correct?
Right. Yeah, I do. My first book was Transmutation Through Ascension, and that was published in 2004. And that's about DNA activation and ascension and planetary shift and change. And then I have my other books on covert technology, which was the induction I went through back in 2004 as well. And those books are called Eye of the Remote, Black Operations, and Areas Beyond 52. And then I have a sequel called Programmed by Deception, and it talks about mind control and psychotronic warfare, covert technology, artificial intelligence, and the Black Satellite Program. And that encompasses that whole ordeal. And then, of course, my documentary covers that as well. And then I've got a sci-fi that I'm planning on being out like in a couple of weeks here called 1 Million Miles to Midnight. So
the one I have
writing
is,
away.
You are. The one I have is called Programmed by Deception. And you get into a lot of different areas there.
Yeah, I do. Well, I've been in a lot of different areas with the covert technology, of course, and it's hard to get it through to people's heads what's going on a planetary level and on a covert level when it comes to this technology. But I think slowly people are starting to understand it.
Do you think the technology that was used against you could be used as a form of planetary mind control?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure it has been, actually. I'm sure that they've been doing this for a very long time. And they used a test pilot in me. Basically, I'm the test pilot for it. But I think they get upgraded a lot, and they keep perfecting it and perfecting it to a point where it just gets more and more fine-tuned.
Well, Solaris, thanks so much for coming on the show again. You always bring
a lot of
clarity to the show and a lot of interesting dialogue. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And you have a wonderful day. And thanks for having me.
All righty, folks. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll be back tomorrow.